Chris Kershaw tipping pitches. CJ, how does the hitter see that and take advantage?
Well, first and foremost, Chris, if it did happen, it always happens when the pitcher is in the stretch. Rarely can you pick up pitches when a guy is thrown from the windup, and that's what we saw in that seventh inning.
Alex Baisley.
Bobby Wagner. Oh.
It's recently come to my attention that many people hosting podcasts say their names.
Yeah. And we just said each other's names.
Yeah, I'm Bobby Wagner.
I'm Alex Baisley.
And this is Tipping Pitches.
Yes, it is. So now if you're listening to this, you actually know what our voices sound like.
Let's be real. And everyone who is listening to this already knows what our voices sound like.
Yeah, probably. Except, hopefully not for long. Yeah. I really hope we get people who like don't know who we are one of these days.
Yeah, mad respect. See us on the streets. Pay homage. Tipping Pitches, big fans. Anyway.
If you see us, because you know what we look like, clearly, because you listen to us.
Yeah, so playoff baseball is officially at peak weirdness.
Yeah, oh my God. After that, we had a podcast last week, and a bunch of weird shit had happened. And I was like, man, that was weird. But, you know, we'll probably like calm down and just get some good games. Nope, it's gotten weirder. Somehow.
Yep.
It's like, I know that like playoff baseball is always a little strange because you never know what can happen. But like, I feel like we've had every possible scenario of weird baseball play out at this point.
Yeah. So, I mean, a little later, we're going to have Russ Steinberg of SB Nation College Basketball on just to talk about his beloved Yankees. But before that, we just wanted to talk a little bit about the games that have happened since we talked last and the bizarre stuff that has gone on in them. And, you know, our last podcast had our resident Nationals expert. God damn, man. What a horrible way to lose a game five.
That was an awful way to lose a game five. That was in that. First of all, that game itself is one of the weirder baseball games I've ever seen.
Bad game.
Yeah.
I mean, entertaining from like the layman's perspective, but from anyone who has played baseball or anyone who watches baseball on like a day-to-day basis, they just didn't make plays that get made every day.
No.
And I don't know what to attribute that to, because I'm not really one to believe in like your nerves make you make a ton of errors as a team. Like, there's no way to prove that, really. And so I don't know. It was just strange to me that like that game ended up being played poorly when those two teams are so talented and really have been great all year.
Yeah. Yeah, it went back and forth, and I was like, you both deserve to lose this baseball game. We'll call it a draw and play again tomorrow, because this is pretty bad.
Although, God, if the Cubs had to play again the next day, they just would have been throwing position players, because they used every single goddamn pitcher. They had to use Wade Davis for 7 outs at the end of the game.
Yeah, because they brought Carl Edwards in. He walked a batter, and Joe Maddon was like, all right, you're getting the hook. Nope, can't let it happen.
Yeah, well, Carl Edwards has really struggled against the Nats.
Yeah, but just this postseason in general, he's been controlled and a little shoddy.
He's good.
Oh, my God.
And his arm is so live, and I love him.
I just want to say, when Joe Maddon came and took him out, and he, like, walked off the mound, he just looked so, like, disappointed in himself. He was, like, shaking his head. I was like, ah, CJ, my heart goes out to you. I really wanted to see more of you, especially with the role he played for them last postseason.
Yeah, as, like, the 100-mile-an-hour throwing setup. It, man.
Yeah, yeah. I like him.
Okay, before we move on, though, I need to talk about the weirdest inning of maybe the postseason so far, and that was Nationals starting pitcher Max Scherzer coming in relief, which you kind of knew was going to happen.
Yeah.
Because he had pitched in game three, but got pulled relatively early on and got right up to his like 100-pitch mark. But he was going to be ready to come in, and he was going to force his way in eventually. So 4 straight Cubs reached against Max Scherzer.
Yeah.
And they reached in ways that had never happened in a half inning in the history of baseball reference.
Yeah, this is the first time we've ever seen all of these things happen like at once.
Not even 4 straight times, but just in an inning in general.
Yeah.
And it only happened in an entire game, 5 games, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Only, so, like, 3 of these things that you're about to read off have only happened, like, a few times.
First one was an intentional walk. Not uncommon. There are many intentional walks. The second one was a strikeout and a pass ball, drop third strike, which is a little less common, but it's not something where you would, like, get up and be like, what is going on? And then the third one was a catcher interference, which, extremely rare.
Yeah.
And then 4th, hit batsman.
Of course. What? All from the likely NL Cy Young winner.
Yeah. And he wasn't even pitching bad.
No.
They weren't making solid contact. He wasn't, like, walking guys, you know? He wasn't wild. He got blitzed by the weirdness of the game. Even Dusty Baker after the game was like, that was one of the weirdest innings I've ever seen in all of my baseball life.
Yeah.
And he's been involved in the game for as long as anyone can remember. Just, like, to lose a Game 5 with all of the precedent of the Nationals' postseason disappointment on that shit is just like, wow,
yeah.
I'm so sorry.
I felt so bad for Dusty Baker because he's gotten a lot of shit as a manager and, like, the bad decisions he makes. And then, for once, he goes out and, like, makes what I think the decision that most people would have made. Like, that's the right decision there. You bring in your best pitcher because you need him to shut it down. And, of course, he gets burned by the fucking weirdness of 2017. Like, totally out of his control. Nothing he could have done about that. I don't know. That just hurts. It's a very Nationals way to go down.
At least they made the playoffs.
Yeah, true. Okay, but we do need to talk about the one other thing that happened in this game. And I was getting really worked up about it because I think that replay review is the one thing that's, like, ruining baseball right now. And I don't put that lightly. But there was the play when Jose...
You mean Yasiel Puig bat flipping is not ruining baseball?
Oh, my God.
It's not making it unwatchable? You mean the fact that they're just not letting starters throw 150 pitches is not ruining baseball?
They should be letting players truck the catcher, actually, because that's what's ruining baseball.
Yeah.
Okay, but in all seriousness, Jose Lobaton is on first base in, what is it, the seventh inning?
Eighth inning.
In the eighth inning. Wilson Contreras, Lobaton is a bit too far off the bag. Wilson Contreras backpicks.
Wilson Contreras, who has one of the best catcher arms in the league,
yeah.
And he does this often, so
yeah.
It's not like Lobaton should have been completely off guard by the fact that Contreras would try this, because he tries this relatively often for a catcher.
Yes, and I don't know why Lobaton was so far off the bag. That was just poor base running by him. But yeah, so Contreras makes a perfect throw. Lobaton gets back before the ball. He beats the ball back to the bag, but his leg comes off the bag, and Rizzo's holding the tag on him. So in theory, and he was ruled safe, because
yes.
That's what the umpire saw. Because, like, how do you see the player's body coming off the bag for, like, a split second? You make a judgment call, whatever. He was safe. But, of course, Joe Maddon has to review that play. And, you know, they review it, and we're sitting there waiting. This is like a pivotal move in the game, too, because there's two on. I think Trey Turner's at the plate, right?
Yeah, Trey Turner's at the plate, because that was then the third out, and then the ninth inning was 1-2-3.
Yeah,
Turner,
like
Worth,
this,
Harper.
Like, this very much is a decision that potentially changes the outcome of the game. And so they review it and call him out because he came off the bag for a split second. I think it's fucking stupid, if I'm being completely honest. That's such a dumb way to, like, play the game, I think. And you pointed out that he was out. And, like, yes, he came off the bag. I think that's a dumb rule. I think he made it back to the bag first. Like, that's what you're supposed to do. And I think that's the wrong way to be using replay.
I think if you pop off the bag, it should have to be so obvious that the umpire could see it in real time, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's no way to see it in real time. And I saw something from Jesse Spector on Twitter where he was like, well, technically speaking, the electrons from Jose Lobaton's foot were technically in the same area as the electrons of the base. So how specific are we going to get here? I agree with what you're saying, and I mean, I don't know how easily you can really legislate this out, like, with proper wording for the umpires in this replay situation without just not being able to replay it, you know?
Well, it's like you can and can't review, like, very specific and weird things in baseball. So, like, why is this one of the things that you can review? Like,
I mean, it's very difficult to have replay and for replay not to make it to its logical conclusion, which is you're just replaying inches and inches and inches. And the cameras are going to keep getting better, and there's going to be more and more cameras facing on every single
robot umps.
Facing every single, you know, angle of the field, and you cannot have replay and not have these split hair decisions. I don't think those two are mutually exclusive, because technically, by the letter of the law, by everything that we've established in baseball up until this point, he's off the base, so he's out. But no one thinks that that's the spirit of the law. And no one thinks, even in the first place, they talked about this on Effectively Wild, but no one thinks these bases should be so high off the ground and so hard in the first place that it's impossible to slide onto it and maintain contact the whole time.
Yeah.
No one understands how hard it is to slide on a hard surface and remain level enough so that you are touching something out in front of you. That's so hard to do. Yeah. That's almost impossible to do.
Yeah, it is. It's incredibly hard to do. And you have to, and you have all these like moving parts. Like, oh, just make sure that when you slide back feet first, while you're making the split second decision of what you need to do, don't raise your foot an inch too high. Otherwise,
not even an inch, like half a centimeter.
Yeah, honestly, it's like, I don't know. I feel like this is not how replay should be used. And frankly, like, it really made me upset. Like, I was just mad the rest of the game because I was like, this is a pivotal moment in the playoffs that completely, it very well could have changed the Nationals' season.
But it's not even just that this was a pivotal moment. It's that every single pivotal moment, every single one, every moment that both fan bases are on their feet is a moment that goes to replay afterwards. Every single moment. Unless it's a clear-cut home run, or it's a two-run double, or there's no play where it's close. Every close play where fans of the Cubs and the Nationals, or fans of the Dodgers and the Cubs, or fans of the Yankees and the Astros are like, oh shit, that was close, like bang, bang play, you know? Bang, bang play, which is the most exciting play in baseball. You know, a double play that gets turned right at the last minute, or a sweet tag that they apply at the last minute. Every single one goes to review, and I just can't take it.
I really can't either.
Baseball has an attention span issue, and they have addressed this so many times. And they keep saying, we want to speed the game up. We want younger viewers. We want all this. We want all that. Well, maybe don't stop the game for 7 minutes after every single exciting play for the casual viewer. It just doesn't make any sense at all.
No, it's... Yeah, you talk about those bang bang plays, and it's like the replay reviews just completely suck the air out of everything. It's like, oh, I actually really do want to sit here for 8 minutes watching a close play. Like, if you, first of all, if you want to talk about like whether or not replay should really be a thing, you have to at least shorten the amount of time they have to make these decisions in, because it's outrageous that like the manager has to make a decision in 30 seconds whether or not to review it. But then once it goes to New York, like there's just unlimited time. It's just however long it takes for them to replay it. It's like if you can't figure, if the manager has to figure out in 30 seconds, or you know, the person in the clubhouse has to figure out within 30 seconds whether or not to review it, so should New York. You have to like make that call. Every close play, just start reviewing it. But beyond that, I think replay is stupid. And I think that they should get rid of it. Like, you've made the argument that like you only have it for home runs. And I'm all for that. Did he hit it out? Did he not hit it out?
That's it. Because that's impossible to see for an umpire on the field.
Yeah.
There was that play a few years back where the home run just scraped the foul pole and it like knocked, chipped the paint off a little bit. Like that is literally impossible to see for an umpire, but everything else, plays on bases, stupid tags like this, neighborhood rule at second, it's useless. Everyone, the baseball players react because they know they should have been out. They know that the throw beat them there. They know that they beat the throw there. Anthony Rizzo did not point down and look up at the umpire and say, his foot popped off the bag.
No.
There's no fucking way to see that.
No.
It's insane. And they've been playing this game their whole life under the pretext that if the second baseman is in the neighborhood while he's turning the double play, you're fucking out.
Yeah.
You're out.
Yeah.
Just because the ball beat you there, you shouldn't have hit into a ground, you shouldn't have hit a ground ball into a double play. It should not have happened. Replay is stupid. It's ruining the playoffs because they get an extra fucking challenge and they challenge everything because it could seriously help their team.
No,
they would
no
be,
Joe Maddon is more than right to call that challenge.
You have to
like,
call that challenge.
You can't not call that challenge. Yeah. But it's so dumb.
Anyway.
It's so dumb.
At the risk of us just ranting for the next 5 minutes, we do have the guest to get to, and we're running out of time here for this beginning section. So do you have anything else on that topic? But we have like 30 seconds.
I just want to say one other thing, and that's that I think replay review is dumb.
So to clarify, we're in agreement here.
The official tipping pitches stance on this is that replay is
dumb.
Good.
Oh, dumb.
Oh, I thought we were. Oh, we're on different pages.
All right. When we come back, Russ Steinberg. Uh, Alex, we have our third straight guest. We are 3 for 3 now.
I know. This is nice.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's peak baseball time. It's postseason time. So we can't do this all on our own. We need to shoulder the load with someone else.
Yeah.
Russ, how's it going?
Going great. Thanks for having me.
Want to introduce yourself to the listeners of the podcast?
All right. Yeah. I'm Russ Steinberg. I know these guys from NYU. I've been a Yankees fan my whole life. I write now for SB Nation, a bunch of other sites as well, primarily on basketball. So my baseball media experience has been via the Twitters and podcasts like this one, which I think makes me as qualified as anyone else.
Definitely as qualified as us.
if not more, I think.
We wanted to have you on. Essentially, my pitch to you at the beginning was, no one thought the Yankees were going to come back from 2-0 to the Indians. No one really thought the Yankees were going to be here from the beginning of the year. So I was like, do you want to come on to talk your shit? Well, it's a little bit bleaker now that they're down 2-0 again, but I will give you your shine to talk your shit about them coming back from the Indians for a little bit if you would like.
Yeah. How does it feel to have eliminated one of the better teams we've seen like in a while? Like one of the better teams that I've seen just in my lifetime.
Well, it was really encouraging, and that's what still gives me hope for this series, because I do think the Indians were the best team in the American League.
Yeah.
And if the Yankees could come back down 2-0 in a best of five against them, you know, I think they have a shot here. But it was really encouraging to see, just because of how many different ways they showed that they could win. They hit Bauer around pretty hard in game 4. That was good. Really good performance from CC for 4 1/3 innings in game 5. And then the bullpen has just been outstanding all series. To see them come back the way they did, win those 3 straight with Judge and Sanchez for the most part not hitting, just showed how dangerous this team could be. And, you know, I've been saying it all season, really, because the Yankees got off to that really hot start and into the playoffs, that this is all gravy to me at this point. I mean, my hope for the Yankees going into the year was they could be good enough to stay in the playoff race and to keep me interested through September. They obviously did that and more. I know that obviously the future is bright, so hoping they could come back now, but if not, you know, it's been a hell of a ride, and they'll be back in spring training anyway.
Yeah, it's a little interesting because they really weren't supposed to be here, right? I mean, they're essentially a year or two ahead of schedule, and then this guy called Aaron Judge started playing pretty well, and Gary Sanchez, obviously. And I mean, their lineup became one of the more threatening ones in the American League. I mean, top to bottom, you'd guess like Starlin Castro producing.
I think like they were one of the teams that benefited, if not the most, one of the most from this whole like home run spike from the ball, because they have guys like, you know, Didi Gregorius and Brett Gardner, who maybe had warning track power last year, and this year it suddenly turns into 20 to 25 home runs, which you might not have seen. Who knows with the size of Brett Gardner's head? No accusations,
I'm just saying.
But yeah, what is it like with them as sort of like an underdog?
It's so weird, because I went my entire childhood with the Yankees being that team that wins all the time and everyone hates them and all of this, and now to have them as the underdog, it's fun. I really do enjoy it. What helps is that this is a really fun team to root for. And that's not something that you've really been able to say for the last 5 or so years. I mean, they finished above 500 every year, which is a miracle, given some of the players that they had. But even though the Yankees were never truly bad, they were boring as hell for a long time. And I think that changed middle of last year when they decided to trade Andrew Miller, trade Aroldis Chapman, get bunch of prospects for them, call up some guys from AAA and just see what they could do. And the team overnight became a real lot of fun to watch. Started with Gary Sanchez last year, continued with Judge and Sanchez and Didi this year.
Yeah.
So I've loved it.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because like the last few years, it feels like the Yankees they've still had this old guard, right? I mean, guys like Jeter, who, you know, it's like we have
Teixeira
mm-hmm. and A-Rod for the longest time too, right?
Wow. It's like that feels like so long ago.
It really does, but
it was
like
last year.
Wait, that was 2016.
Yeah.
What?
He retired in 2016,
damn,
like halfway through, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember, he retired, and then the next day they brought up Judge and Tyler Austin, and they both homeward in their first at bat.
Oh my god.
God damn. Well, that was a nice trip down memory lane.
Yeah, and Teixeira was last year too.
God. Good god.
Damn. I know.
That's insane. But yeah, it feels like the new era has kind of been ushered in, right? You have a lot of young guys that are actually fun to root for. And it's like this combination of guys like CeCe Sabathia, who are like maybe the leaders of the clubhouse.
And so easy to like.
I love CeCe.
I think the old guard that they've lost was a lot easier to hate. And I think a guy like CeCe is... You can't not like him.
Yeah, exactly. Guys like
Jeter. Unless you have ulterior motives.
Guys like Jeter, not that people hated him, but it was always like people kind of rolled their eyes because it was overrated, like bad defense, that sort of thing.
But I've heard that enough that now I've turned the other way and I love Jeter again because everyone has been saying that. And like I need to be the guy who stands up and goes, wait, actually, he's a Hall of Fame player.
Yeah.
He's not God, but he was really, really good.
Yeah. We live in like a world of overrating people at the beginning and then underrating them because people get tired of them and then eventually coming back somewhere in the middle of that, I think. I think it's happening in other sports too right now. Like I was just reading this piece yesterday about Kyrie Irving and just how he went from probably underrated and sort of like a niche basketball guy because Cleveland was terrible. And then he got a little bit overrated because they won championships. And now people are like, oh, you know, I can't stand him. I don't like the way he plays. He's selfish. But, I mean, we see that in other sports, too. And that sort of happened with Jeter and I think with the Yankees in general. But anyway.
Oh, well, I think that just opens the door for me to write my piece about how Mike Trout is actually not the greatest player in baseball.
Well, that's a hot take.
I'm sorry. And
let me let you explain that.
I actually don't really have anything to do with it. He's the best player I've ever seen in my lifetime.
That's like, yesterday I was trying to make the point. It's not cool to dislike Mike Trout and Clayton Kershaw. It's not.
No.
It's not edgy or fun to be contrarian. You're just wrong.
Yeah. But So these new young guys, I mean, who do you gravitate towards right now? I mean, Luis, it feels like they have a really nicely rounded out rotation right now. Guys like Severino, right? And Pineda when he's healthy, and now they have Sonny Gray too. I guess it's
that
kind
hurts
of
you.
It hurts me. I guess you're kind of you're kind of lamenting that they went for Gray and not Verlander at the deadline. But I don't know how do you feel about it?
About Gray versus Verlander?
Yeah, and maybe more big picture kind of future prospects.
Yeah, well, I think long term Gray was probably the smarter move, even if Verlander's the better player, simply because he's a lot cheaper, less of a commitment. Probably had to give up a lot less for him.
Yeah.
So I'm fine with that. And it's harder to say this now after watching Verlander yesterday, but it's not like Verlander was the piece that the Yankees needed. They didn't need a one or two starter. They had that. They needed someone to shore up the rotation in the middle and back end, and that's what Gray was for. So I didn't mind that move at all. The rotation itself is fine. Looking at this series, I think Houston has a better front end of the rotation, obviously, but the Yankees have a deeper rotation, which is one of the things that gives me hope in these next few games, because I think games 3 and 4, the Yankees have a better starter than Houston. They also have a better bullpen. They also play much better at home than they do on the road.
Yeah, so they also have a deeper bullpen, too.
Oh, yeah.
And the Astros have a guy like Chris Davinsky, but it's not like they have Canely, Robertson, and Chapman.
The Yankees are running out guys one after the other who would be good closers on pretty much any other team.
Yeah.
And they're pitching in the sixth inning.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if you pull Severino after 4 because you can bring Canley in for like a couple innings.
That's
and
the
then
thing.
Like, thus continues the maybe mispronunciation of Tommy Canley. Canley? Conley? We pronounce it
whatever.
So
it's
I
Canley.
Say Canley.
Canley.
Sometimes we gravitate towards Conley, but who knows? There's an A and an H and then a vowel, I mean, and then a consonant.
Conley?
Yeah.
Are we sure that the emphasis is on the right part?
Who knows? We're going to have him on the podcast.
Yeah, have Tommy on. He could explain. He's busy
anyway,
now,
Russ,
but after
you were
the
saying
season. What I would like to see in the offseason, and I don't know, this is a terrible free agent market this year. I would like to see the Yankees get one more established starting pitcher, simply because I don't think CeCe is going to be back next year. And if he is, he's, I don't know, 53 years old. You don't know what you're going to get from him. And also Tanaka might opt out. So I wish I could get another solid starting pitcher. Chance Adams will have a chance to make the team out of spring training. Montgomery was really good for long stretches this year.
Yeah, he was really impressive.
So like the pieces are there for them to have a really good rotation, but that's still like the one area that I would be a little nervous about. No one's worried about the offense. No one's worried about the bullpen. The defense, I think, has been really underrated this year, especially middle infield. I think they've been incredible.
And especially when Aaron Hicks has been healthy.
Their outfield is tremendous.
Out there. Yeah.
And Aaron Judge doesn't get enough credit for how good of an outfielder he is.
Yeah. He robbed a home run the other day.
Yeah.
Failed to rob one last night, but you know. Fan interference, maybe?
I don't think it was. I think they had to look at it. It was close enough to look at the replay, but I don't think that was interference at all. I think that was gone anyway. Fan didn't appear to actually reach over into play. I think that's fine. I'm more upset that Todd Frazier's ball that went through the fence wasn't a home run.
What a bizarre play. I put
Houston
on
needs to fix their ballpark. They've got like the catwalks that dead any ball. They've got holes in their fences.
Yeah. The ball getting stuck in the fence and then everyone just kind of staring up at it was like very reminiscent of Sandlot to me. The ball like going over the fence and they just like peeking over. But anyway, you brought up free agents. So I feel like this may be a good time to transition to future free agents.
Are we talking about future Yankee Bryce Harper?
That's what I was going to say.
Or Manny Machado.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on that? So given the choice between, I guess it's what, Harper, Machado, there's another one, right? Kershaw, technically. Or did they extend him?
I think they extended Kershaw.
Okay. I think they have Kershaw left.
So given the choice, Harper, Machado, and the field, who do you want the Yankees to throw their piles and piles of money at?
Well, I'd be a fool to not say Bryce Harper, wouldn't I? Because he's Bryce Harper. That said, the Yankees outfield, they've got plenty of options there for a while. I think having a third baseman like Machado would be a huge boost for them. Honestly, I'd take them both. Take one or the other. I would be happy with just Machado. I'd be happy with just Harper. I'd be happy with both of them.
Are you watching these guys and being like, can't wait to see them in pinstripes? Like when you see
Every
Bryce
time
Harper.
I watch Bryce Harper play, I say I can't wait to see him on the Yankees.
That probably hurts our Nationals fans listening.
God, that must be nice, though. Yeah. Honestly, I look at him and I'm like, oh, good luck to anyone who gets him because it's not going to be the A's.
It's not going to be the Mets. Nope. So, yeah, I see Bryce Harper and I'm like, I want him to succeed against everyone else except my team.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry you have to root for the A's. The Mets are in the same market as the Yankees, so I guess they've had their share of financial difficulty.
Yeah, that's a whole different
story.
But, I mean, they also don't have, like, the decades and decades that the Yankees had in advance to accrue a lot of money in this market. And they also threw away any money that they had in the whole.
Yeah, all the Yankees money's from those 1930s championships, isn't it?
Let's take it back a little bit. Let's go retro. What is the first Yankees team that you remember really falling in love with or just you remember watching and rooting for on any regular basis?
First team I remember really watching and rooting for, probably end of the 99 season and then all through 2000. I think I really...
Just in time for them to sweep the Subway Series.
No, they won it in five. Mets won a game.
Oh, true.
Mets won game three.
True. I just block everything out as it relates to Yankees-Mets.
I think that the first team I was really obsessive over was the 2001 team. That was exciting because it was Paul O'Neill's last year. Tino was my favorite player. I think, was that his last year or could have been the next year? But you got the sense after that season that the dynasty era was over. And there was still a lot of excitement for the future. I mean, the team stayed great even though they didn't win championships. But yeah, that was probably the first team. Also, Andy Pettit's probably my favorite Yankee of all time.
Yeah.
Solid choice.
Same with my mom.
Yeah, same with mom too. He's a mom favorite.
Yeah.
When Andy Pettit was injured, I think like probably early 2010s, one of the last few years of his career, he made a rehab start in AA Trenton, which is like 10 minutes from my house. And my mom heard that he was going down to Trent. I guess she like read it in the paper or saw it on Facebook or something. And my mom literally like texted me while I was at school and was like, we have to go see Andy. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Because I didn't hear about this yet. I was in school. And she was like, we have to go see Andy. He's coming to pitch for the Trenton Thunder. And I'm like, Andy Pettit? She's like, of course.
Yeah.
She has a poster of him. She's a Mets fan.
She has a poster of Andy Pettit
in her office, like in his traditional like hat pulled down, like glove over his face, you know? And I don't know. It's sort of sacrilege if you think about it, being a Mets fan and having only a Yankees poster in your office. But it's Andy Pettit, so I'll let it slide.
Yeah, Pettit was also the starting pitcher in the first Yankees game I ever went to. So that was part of the...
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it was Andy Pettit versus Paul Byrd, the Kansas City Royals.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess the Yankees won that one.
They did win that one.
Yeah.
You rooted for them like right at the tail end of their like 90s dynasty, the first part of the modern dynasty, right? And then there was sort of like a lull there for a while, and then 2009. So did you build up an expectation rooting early on that they would just win every single year, or like win every other year? And then how did that translate to when they didn't win for, you know, almost 10 years, and then now they're going on, I guess, 8? What is that like for you, like having the expectation that the Yankees are just going to win every single year?
Well, I do have to say that when the Yankees don't win, nobody feels sorry for me. So I have to...
Count us in that group.
Yeah. I have to remember that one championship and still like 5 or 6 playoff appearances in the last 8 years is what almost any other team would sign up for in a heartbeat.
Yep.
So I know that. But early on, I mean, I watched the Yankees win it all in 99 and 2000, watched them go to Game 7 in 2001 and just fall short. Yeah, it was... I can't sit here and say I didn't expect to see them in the World Series every year, because that's all I knew.
They were like 2 for 2 in your like early fandom, yeah.
Yeah. So like 2002, they lost in the division series to the Angels, and it was weird watching the rest of the playoffs. 2003, obviously, they made it. 2004, the playoffs were canceled. 2005, 2006, and 2007, they all lost, and that was really frustrating. But it also did make 2009 a lot sweeter, especially because I was a sophomore here, was living in Carlisle they won it. So after that game ended, we went out into Union Square, and it was like a riot. It was so much fun.
Yeah, I can't imagine like what it's like to be in New York when the Yankees win the World Series.
I was living in
Carlisle in 2015 when the Mets lost the World Series.
Yeah.
So it was almost bookends there. It was extremely sad. I cried like after every single game that they lost in the World Series. Alex can probably attest to that.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I'm curious how you feel about, we mentioned him earlier, but Alex Rodriguez, are you a part of the Yankees fandom who's like, good, be gone?
No.
I know, there were a lot of Yankees fans who were disillusioned by him at the end. And there was obviously the weird feud, quote unquote, between him and Jeter refused to move off short for him. But I know in the last few years, he's had his revival of sorts among non-Yankees fans. And I know myself, I'm on board with that. I love him. He is amazing in the studio. There's been like glowing profile after glowing profile of him.
Yeah.
It's a little much, but I don't know. How are you feeling about him?
Yeah. How do you feel about the Rodriguez-ance?
Wow.
Boo. Okay. Anyway.
Well, okay. So two things. One, remember how a few minutes ago I defended Derek Jeter?
Yes.
That he's a Hall of Famer, which he still is. Still great. He was also the second best shortstop on the Yankees for most of the 2000s. Number two, I think a reason why I started to gravitate toward A-Rod again, and I think a lot of Yankees fans did as well, certainly not all of them, but a lot of them, is just seeing how poorly the Yankees organization treated him in his last couple of years there. I mean, A-Rod, we were talking earlier about how the Yankees were a boring team in 2015, 2016. A-Rod was the one really interesting part of that team, and the Yankees treated him like crap. The whole, his home run records aren't marketable, so we're not going to give him his bonuses. You know, all the way up to the end with not letting him play third in his last game until they finally folded and let him have that one play. I thought it was just disgusting. And A-Rod, to his credit, didn't blast the team, kept going about his business. He wasn't very good in his last year, but he still hit a few home runs. The Yankees were going nowhere last year. They should have batted him clean up every game anyway. And let him go for 700,
yeah,
because that would have been the one interesting thing about that team, you know, until they brought the kids up, that would have been worth watching.
He's definitely not as much of a detriment to the Yankees as Albert Pujols is to the Angels this year.
So Albert Pujols has 15 years left on his contract, so you're going to have to get used to that.
Yeah, true. I was at the game where A-Rod passed Willie Mays, I think it was.
Oh, okay.
And he got a decent ovation there. So, I mean, yeah. Like, I think the fans were into the chase, you know, because you have to find something to get excited about with boring teams. And the Yankees were still, like, relatively good at that time. But everyone seemed really excited, and I didn't even know that he was on the verge of it. I was just at that game because I had tickets, right? Like, the Yankees did not, as you said, like, they sort of treated the records and the chase as something that they didn't want to market, slash just decided in advance that they couldn't market. But on a larger point, though, sort of how do you deal with like the backlash of non-Yankees fans in your life who are like, you root for the evil empire, like you know, like, oh, or the much contrived front runner argument, right? Like, how do you deal with sort of trying to argue that you are an authentic fan and not that you need to prove that or anything, but like, what are those conversations
yeah,
like?
I mean, just to jump in, like I feel like whenever the Yankees come up, people like try to invalidate it and be like, well, of course they're winning with that payroll, right? and like the Dodgers are getting the same treatment right now, right? So yeah, how do you combat that sort
of thing?
I mean,
for me and Alex, we never have to deal with that. Because I mean, I'm a Mets fan and like that's agony. And Alex is an A's fan. So as soon as we say
and
like...
that's not agony?
No, that's agony. That's what I'm saying is that as soon as I say I'm a Mets fan and as soon as he says I'm an A's fan, it's not like, ugh. It's more like, I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, there's kind of two ways to look at it. One, I think the conversation about the evil empire is a lot different today than it was when I was in middle school, when it was a lot more difficult for me to deal with because I was in middle school and middle schoolers are mean. And the people that the middle schoolers are being mean to can't take it. So that sucked. But also the Yankees were winning, so it was fine.
Yeah.
But now
fair
that's,
trade-off in
yeah.
my view.
But now that's not really the case anymore because the Yankees management has become extremely cheap. They don't spend money like they used to. Their payroll is not as high as it once was by a long shot. They announced last week that they're going to try to get under the cap for the luxury tax next year. So I don't expect them to go out and spend. Not that there's much to spend on this year. My hope is that they're doing all of this so that they can go nuts with that free agent class 2 years from now. But I'm not convinced. So that's one way. Like the whole evil empire thing's kind of dead now, especially with how good the Red Sox have gotten through free agency, how good teams like the Dodgers have gotten, how bloated their payrolls become.
Yeah, when there's four evil empires,
right,
it sort of loses
its
potency.
Right. Yeah. Like the Yankees will be the bankies always because that's just what people associate with them. So fine, even if it's not quite the case anymore. The other thing, though, is that regardless of what their payroll is, regardless of what they're spending money on, the people in the Yankees front office are some of the worst humans alive. You saw that with the whole netting fiasco before they finally caved.
Yeah.
You saw that with the moat and with, I think it was Lon Trost saying vaguely racist things about fans who have never sat in premium seating. Like,
oh boy.
It's very clear that the people in the Yankees front office, probably minus Brian Cashman when he's not with his mistress, are just awful people. So the other thing is I have to view the Yankees organization and the Yankees team as two separate entities almost. Right? Yeah. 'Cause I root for the guys on the field who are so likable from the manager all the way on down, and I root for those guys, and whatever happens in the front office, I have to view as something entirely differently. Yeah, so my hope had been that after the election, when Donald Trump, the New Yorker, who's friends with all of these guys, was elected, that he would just put them all in his cabinet, and I would never have to see them with the Yankees again. And unfortunately, that didn't happen. But maybe if the Yankees can come back and defeat the Astros and win the World Series, maybe only the front office will go to the White House for that visit, and they just won't leave.
They'll just stay there forever.
That's
they just get lost, like roaming the halls.
That's what I'm banking on now. Like Randy Levine and Lon Trost and the Steinbrenners just go be with the president.
For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, they all love Trump. That's fine. Go get out of my baseball team.
I feel like, honestly, you could probably say that about the majority of the owners of Major League Baseball teams. Or just general sports franchises. Like,
yeah, well, a lot of them fake it better.
Yes.
Yeah. That is very true. A lot of them do fake it better. All right, well, let's wrap it up by bringing it back to 2017 real quick. So, you know, I would never suggest that the Yankees might not advance and win the World Series, but if they were to not, who would you be pulling for out of the other three teams?
Hey, you never know. honestly, if the Yankees don't come back and win this series, I would root for the Astros. As much as I hate to say it right now in the middle of this series, they're a really fun team too.
Yeah.
Also, I'm a UConn guy, so I love George Springer.
Fair.
He actually went to high school in the town right next to the one I grew up in. It's a cool local story for me. So I love him. I love Correa. Jose Altuve, I have to love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he's one of the few Might be the only player in Major League Baseball shorter than I am. So, like, those, I always gravitate towards the really short guys.
He's also just incredible.
And he's a hell of a baseball player.
Yeah, Alex and I were just talking, that single up the middle off Aroldis Chapman in the ninth inning, as painful as that might be for you, unbelievable. Like, it's low and inside 101 miles an hour, and he just takes it right back up the middle.
And that just goes to show you that, like, as great as the Yankees' bullpen is and as good as the Yankees' starting rotation can be on a day that they're on, Houston is good enough that sometimes it just doesn't matter. Like, Chapman obviously gave up the winning run yesterday. I don't think he pitched a bad inning. No. It was a great piece of hitting from Altuve, and then the one who got the winning hit, I don't even
Correa.
Remember. It was Correa.
Yeah, Correa.
Correa also probably a future MVP.
Yeah.
So, you know, shit happens.
Fair enough. I respect the respect that you have for the team that is up to nothing on your team. So
that also doesn't really tell the whole story, right? Because they've both been incredibly close games.
They were both two-one games.
So, like, a couple bounces and things might have gone the Yankees' way. So,
yeah.
As much as it seems like the Yankees are in a hole, which they are, they very much, I agree with you that I think they could come back. I mean, and if they're going to do it, now is the time, because when they face Verlander again, things feel pretty bleak.
Right. Like, they absolutely have to win games 3 and 4, because you can convince me that if they were to do that, they could beat Keuchel or Verlander in a game. They're not going to beat them both back to back. That's insane.
Yeah.
So if they are down 3-1, it's over.
I mean, who knows? They beat Corey Kluber twice. Or Corey Kluber twice. I guess they technically lost the first one where they rocked him.
But right.
They battered him around
a little bit. I think it's clear that Kluber wasn't completely healthy.
Well, you know what? Weirder things have happened in 3-1 series
in the last
couple years.
I've heard that there's an NBA team that blew a 3-1 lead.
I don't know who the basketball team was.
I've just heard. These are things that people have told me.
That was a while ago.
These are things people say on Twitter. They're unverifiable.
Yep. Yeah.
Who knows? All right, Russ. Thank you for being the third guest on Tipping Pitches.
Thank you so much for coming in and talking
to me. Thank you for having me.
You want to throw your Twitter handle out there for the listeners?
Hell yes. How many listeners do you have?
Oh, enough.
Enough? Good.
It's like double digits at least.
Oh, wow. All right, so I'm really expanding my audience. because of the number of followers I have that haven't muted me is probably single digits. Give me a follow on the Twitters at @Russ_Steinberg, @Russ_Steinberg.
All right. Thanks, Russ.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, big thanks to Russ for coming in.
Yeah, shout out to him. But also, just to get a Yankees fan in the studio and have them talk casually about the Yankees without just yelling, 27 rings, is nice. You know, as a Mets fan, I can confirm that was nice.
Yeah.
But anyway, so just to wrap things up a little bit, what are you looking forward to the most going forward?
I mean, I think we're probably going to see an Astros-Dodgers World Series. I really appreciate Russ's optimism. I think the Astros are probably going to take this one. Astros are a really good baseball team, but I think it's going to be a fun series. I do think, you know, the Yankees might be able to snag a game or two, and so that should be fun. This Cubs-Dodgers series is, I think, also going to be really fun. Watching Yasiel Puig, you know how much I love him.
I know. And
his bat flips on doubles and his calling, his shot on doubles. I don't know.
You're the biggest Yasiel Puig apologist in the entire world.
Apologist? Yeah. There's nothing to apologize for.
Except for when he still does the shit when he's not playing well. But
who cares? Why? Who cares? I mean, like, why is it bad?
It's not bad. It's not that he's not allowed to do it, but if he's doing this while he's not playing extremely well like he is right now, I think that it's fair for people to dislike that. It's fair to be critical of someone who's cocky when they're not doing well. If you're cocky, you're asking for it. You're asking to be criticized. That's fair. If a pitcher is shouting and screaming at the batter after every single time he strikes them out, it's fine to not like that guy after he gives up a home run. I feel like that's fair.
Yeah.
Puig is good for the game. He's so much fun. He's supremely talented. But at the same time, it's even better for the game that people hate and love him, oh, I think.
No, I don't disagree with you on that. Everyone has an opinion about Puig, which is good at least. But like, I think you're right. That's like what we need. But that's why we need more players like him, frankly, yeah. Because it gets people engaged. It gets people, it gives people something to like or dislike about the Dodgers. And you'd be like, I just don't like the Dodgers because how can I root for Yasiel Puig, right?
That's just...
I mean, it's dumb, but like, stupid. You know, that's people would make that argument about like the Yankees, like, oh, fuck A-Rod, right? Like, I can't root for him.
Yeah, but he actually cheated, so.
Yes, he did cheat.
That feels fair.
I think that's very fair. But anyway, this Dodgers.
We're huge A-Rod apologists.
Yeah.
I called you a Yasiel Puig apologist, but I'm the world's biggest A-Rod apologist.
This Dodgers team is real fun. It's sad that we're not seeing Corey Seager.
Yeah.
And yet, maybe it won't even make a difference because the Dodgers, guess what? Still a good baseball team. They're really good. I don't know if you forgot. They won a lot of games back in the middle of the season.
Yeah, like our very first couple podcasts were just us being like, so Dodgers, Astros, it's imminent. Like, yeah. It will happen.
Yep.
It'll be fun. It'll be a clash of titans. And then the Indians came out of nowhere at the end. And like a flare up in the night sky.
Yeah.
Straight back down.
Ooh.
But anyway, I mean, there's not really much else to say without speculating too much. Just that, watch these games. They're exciting as hell. Watching Jose Altuve single up the middle off 101-mile-an-hour fastball and get himself on base so that he could score from first on a Carlos Correa double that was 101-mile-an-hour fastball low and away is incredible. So
definitely watch these games. We're not being paid by Fox Sports and MLB to tell you that, but if they want to pay us, we won't turn it down. We are official MLB stands. So
all right, I am Bobby Wagner.
I'm Alex Baisley.
And this has been Tipping Pitches. Thanks for listening, y'all.
Thanks, guys. We'll see you next week.
Freedom is just another word for